What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Canes Insight Daily Podcast, powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Had the first round of the draft yesterday. Next couple rounds, next couple days coming up. Hopefully some Canes go off the board. We're going to be breaking down some lessons we learned from the first round. Always like to dive into these guys as recruits to learn lessons that we can learn when we're looking at the Hurricanes and their recruiting process and their evaluation process and their strategy overall. How does the first round inform what we should be doing going forward? Always a fun exercise. Also, we're going to take you to football school. Our man Coach Zuck's been on the injured list, been a little sick. He's coming back to talk about the transfer portal from the eyes of a coach. Obviously, a big portal weekend. We've been on that all week. You want to listen to some of our old episodes this week. We talk about all the portal visitors and break that down. Coach Zuck's going to take you into that process from the eyes of a coach, and you're going to learn a lot about how this thing actually works and how coaches deal with all this stuff. First, I want to tell you about a roster that's full of first-round picks. That is Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. If you or someone you care about has been injured in an accident, call 1-800-747-FREE, 1-800-747-3733, and take back control of your life with Anajar and Levine. All right, bringing in Pete here. Pete, first draft in a while, not working, watching it as a fan. We've been in here early kind of breaking down the list of the players and some of the trends. So really want to dive in to what makes these guys first-round picks, something you know very well because your first-round pick client was a high school quarterback that ended up as an offensive tackle, right?
Yeah, and was recruited as a tight end to the collegiate level. And it wasn't until college that he actually moved from tight end to tackle and obviously physically developed from there. But it's very interesting to look back and kind of backtrack to how we got there, which with all of these guys, right? Because that's what they do in the league year after year after the draft is kind of figure out, okay, where do these guys start and not make the same mistakes maybe from previous years?
Yeah, look, trends always important for strategy, especially in this world where things are changing fast and you want to adjust to new things. The biggest thing being the transfer portal era. How do you adjust to the transfer portal era in your recruiting strategy and your roster development strategy? And I think the first thing here is going to be transfer quarterbacks. Now, I've been pounding the table. Spend your money on portal quarterbacks. Do not get into these bidding wars for high school quarterbacks because it is hard to get somebody that is an expensive blue chip player from the beginning to the end that pans out. It's much more, you know, you can get a blue chip player, but get him from the transfer portal where you know what you're getting as opposed to spending big. Doesn't mean don't take four stars or five stars, but just don't get into bidding wars at the high school level. So just some examples. Six quarterbacks in this draft. Four of those guys were transfers. Talking about Caleb Williams was the first pick. Jaden Daniels, the second pick. Michael Penix, the eighth pick. Bo Nix taken shortly thereafter in the top 15. All transfer quarterbacks, some of them very highly rated, but they were transfers when they were ultimately acquired by the program that had success with them. The other two, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy. Drake May's family all went to North Carolina. He's from North Carolina, sort of a hometown deal. McCarthy was a recruiting win for Harbaugh. So, again, that's my philosophy. I've been screaming about it on this podcast and on the message boards at canesinsight.com for a while. Focus on the portal when it comes to the money at quarterback. Pete, what's your take on this?
Well, not just the quarterback position, but there was five other guys who were transfers as well, three of them being defensive linemen. Chop Robinson from Penn State, originally at Maryland. Laiatu Latu, another guy who was a transfer. You see Miami and Jared Verse, obviously, came in from Albany, and we'll get into him a little bit in just a moment here. But you see Miami has multiple defensive linemen visiting this weekend from the transfer portal and coming up also with these Michigan State guys. So there's been this debate, as we talked about this week, how do you build the roster out, high school guys, transfer guys? You need to have a mix in today's day and age of college football.
Yep, no doubt. And another trend, and this is where I think college football and pro football diverge. If you look at the first round of the draft yesterday, no running backs, no off-ball linebackers. And I think this is one area where the college game is different because the college game, it's much more important to have a physical running game in college. All the teams that win the championship have it, whether it's Michigan this year, Alabama every year, Georgia every year. That's a staple of what those teams do. It is part of their identity. You think Michigan last year, power running. You think Georgia and Alabama, even as they got more explosive, power running has always been part of what they do. Even if their backs don't get drafted that high, they're still big and physical at the college level. And of course, those teams also have big-time linebackers. Junior Colson for Michigan last year, Georgia and Alabama, you know the names at linebacker over the course of time. So I think that's a trend you see in the pros that I would not necessarily translate to college. I think you still need to invest in the running back, the big running back position particularly, and the linebacker position at the college level.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I was recruiting, I would personally focus on the trenches just because I felt like that was, you know, the best long-term return on investment there. And that's where the NFL obviously invests the most in these early round picks here. And as we pull up the, you know, recruiting rankings here as well, it's interesting to look at some of the numbers here, mostly 4-star, 5-stars, 9 3-stars, and one guy unranked, which was Jared Verse. But the numbers are getting more accurate. I think you would agree with that. There's just so much more information available now that, yes, not everyone is going to be that blue chip 5-star recruit, but you're putting yourself in a way better position as a program recruiting those 4 and 5-star guys. So, yes, these 3-star guys, there are diamonds in the rough. But if you go back and look at a lot of these guys' stories, there's reasons why not only were they, you know, rated that way at the time, but you can go and project and say, okay, it makes sense how he turned out this way.
Yeah, we're going to dive into those 3-star players and why they got where they are. I do this every single year. It's a great exercise. I agree with the rankings getting better. You've seen the 4-star, 5-star percentage get higher every single year. Because again, I go back every year and look at the recruiting rankings and the recruiting stories of these guys. I think one position where that's very prominent right now is receiver. You look at the receivers drafted this year, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, Brock Bowers, who's really a receiver, tight end, but he's really more of a receiver. Xavier Worthy from Texas, Leggett from South Carolina, Brian Thomas from LSU. Those guys are all blue chip players out of high school. Different bodies, different stories, but they're all blue chip players. Only non-blue chip player of the pass catchers was Ricky Pearsall, who was from Arizona, went to Arizona State, then transferred to Florida. And he was productive. He was already a good player when Florida got him out of the portal. So it's not like he was like a secret. He was a coveted transfer that they got. So really blue chip at the pass catching positions. Real quick, Pete, I want to go over geography before we dive into these sleepers.
Let me stop you real quick, because look at what Miami did in the recruiting class this year, a wide receiver, Nye Carr and JoJo Trader, two blue chip guys, right? And look, Jacoby George, Restrepo were 4-star players from what I remember. I don't know if Restrepo.
Restrepo was 3. Jacoby 4, yeah.
Okay, so look, those guys have become awesome, productive players, right? But I think year over year, you need to continue to recruit at an elite level at that position. We have not seen that necessarily at Miami in recent years. I think that in last year's class is a very, very good sign.
Yeah, Horton, a 4-star.
Yep.
You mentioned Trader, Nye Carr, Chance Robinson.
Robbie Washington.
Robbie Washington's a 4-star, and Ray Joseph's a 4-star too. So a lot of blue chippers in that receiver room for Miami right now. Quick geography. Nothing to real big trends here. To me, it seemed like pretty spread out. I think South Florida's a little down. We've seen as many as 4 or 5 first rounders from Florida. South Florida only won this year with Dallas Turner, but Florida was strong. You had Michael Penix from Tampa, Terrion Arnold from Tallahassee, Quinyon Mitchell from Gainesville, went to Toledo, and then who else am I missing? Dallas Turner from Fort Lauderdale area went to Alabama. So no big three. So you had a guy from South Florida, you had a guy from Tallahassee, you had a guy from Gainesville, and the big three did not land any of these guys, plus Tampa, which is sort of an open territory. None of them went to Florida, Florida State, or Florida, or Miami. That's why we've been down. Florida State's been up a little bit, but overall, not where you need to be in the first round with any of these guys. And by the way, you know, how many first rounders were there? You had Pearsall transfer, Versa transfer, but it's not like you're getting these homegrown first rounders in the big three, which is what you need. Georgia had 2 players. The state of Georgia, California had 4, Texas had 2, Louisiana had 2, Washington, D.C. area had 3, which is very good. And then, you know, three Polynesians, right, with Latu, Taliesi from Oregon State, and then Fonata from Washington. So, I'm big on getting Polynesians to Miami. We got couple right now that are really, really good players. Would love some more because of what they bring to the table, size-wise, athleticism-wise, and attitude-wise. They're going to the NFL first round for a reason. But Pete, returning to what you were setting up here, the rankings getting better. Only really a third of the first round now is three stars. Where it used to be half or more. So you're seeing a much bigger majority of the first rounders being blue chip players. However, I think there's some trends when we look at the three stars and PL. I'll kick it to you in a second, but position wise, five offensive linemen were three stars, still a developmental position, even though they're getting better at identifying some studs. You still are going to find late bloomers, diamonds in the roughs on that position. Two defensive linemen, one quarterback, Michael Penix from Florida, one wide receiver, and one corner. So first one I'll talk about, Pete, I want to hear your thoughts on this guy. Michael Penix, Florida quarterback. There's a lot of Florida quarterbacks in the NFL right now, including the reigning league MVP. But if you look at those Florida quarterbacks, most of them were three-star or less, partly because I think Florida quarterbacks are underdeveloped. There's not a lot of great quarterback coaching in the state. There's not a lot of great, you know, expensive coaching. There's great coaches, but expensive coaching, high investment in development in Florida like there is in other places. So you get very good players that know the basics and have good coaches but aren't fully developed because, again, just the money and the infrastructure for quarterbacks. So Penix fits that mold. He was a center fielder in baseball, lettered in track, 22.89 in the 200 meters, very fast time. Again, center fielder, multi-sport quarterbacks, Florida quarterbacks that are raw. These are trends that we've talked about on the Canes Inside podcast for a while. Michael Penix, Pete, fits right into that mold.
Yeah, and I think you and I are huge fans of his. I think, look, the fact that he's been hurt, obviously, that did not help his stock. It didn't hurt him. Obviously, he still went top 10, right? But I think he probably would have been in that top three. I don't think the age as much as the injury factor, but the fact that he's bounced back from the injuries to me is the impressive part. I think he said it in the letter that he wrote to the teams before the draft. Everyone has injury concerns. It's how you bounce back from them. And he's come back better than ever. He reportedly had an incredible throwing session in bad weather with the Falcons as well. But that's, I mean, hand size is something that you always talk about with a quarterback. So I know he, you know, that's something that he is a strength of his. But just not to jump back to what we were talking about before, but I had one point to make on the geography thing as well. Like you said, not much of a trend in terms of most of the guys are coming from here. Obviously, you understand Florida, Texas, you know, California are always going to be up there. But national recruiting, what has Mario Cristobal implemented heavily since he's been here? Obviously, you have to get the top guys from South Florida, from Florida. But that national recruiting aspect to me is going to be a huge trend in Miami. And I think we're going to continue to see guys from all over the place join this team. But Penix, big fan of his. Interesting situation there in Atlanta, obviously, with Kirk Cousins. But I think he'll do very well at this level.
Yeah, I mean, I won't get into the details. I'm a huge Penix guy. I salute Atlanta. I know they're getting criticism now, just like Green Bay got criticism when they took Jordan Love. If this guy plays well, the whole city will have number 9 jerseys, and we won't even be talking about this. But trends to take away, again, multi-sport, Florida QBs being underdeveloped with upside, things you want to see when Miami's trying to find maybe a second quarterback in the class or a young quarterback to complement what they bring into the portal. Keep in mind that pattern. A lot of guys fit that. Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver from Arizona. He was one guy, go back and look, he played everywhere. He was the receiver, but he was a quarterback. He played defense and then track times. I mentioned the 22.8 200 meter for Penix, 11.01 100 meter for Pearsall, which is solid, not blazing, but certainly good speed. And when you combine it with the game tape where he's making a lot of plays, you have an interesting player going back and looking at it.
Yeah, a guy, another transfer player, right? Obviously was at Arizona State, finished up at Florida this year, and a guy who improved his stock over the last couple of years because, you know, I had a guy out of Arizona State a couple of years ago, and I was not hearing that Pearsall was this level of prospect at that time. So props to him for continuing to improve himself, improve his stock.
Yeah, we're gonna pull up a huddle here, which is gonna be interesting. This is a Florida guy that got away, right? So this is really the guys you want to focus on. These are the huddle clips that you see on CanesInsight.com on the recruiting forums that people post, say, I like this guy, and then 3 or 4 years later, the post gets bumped and the guy looks like a genius. But Quinyon Mitchell, looking at his senior film here, this is the defensive back, cornerback that went to Toledo from Gainesville, Florida, Williston, same area. Trends continue. Basketball guy, ran track, 10-9 in the 100 meters. Play both ways. Watch a senior film. You see him not just playing corner. He is playing running back. He is making plays. He's cutting against the grain. He's taking it to the house. He shows you the speed. He shows you the quickness. The size is good. If I saw this film, this is senior film, so he probably was already halfway on his way to Toledo when this thing came out. But you look at this and you say, wow, yeah. If you slapped a 4-star rating on this film or a 5-star rating, no one would blink an eye. Because you see the speed, you see the size, and you see the two-way ability. But again, we've listed three guys with good track times, three guys that do a lot of different things. You're seeing the trend already. And Quinyon Mitchell, Miami has struggled to sign cornerbacks. We need to be looking in-state or anywhere for guys with that athleticism as a starting point, that speed, those track times. I got to be honest, with Miami's current defensive back room, I don't know a lot of their track times, which is a bad sign because that means they didn't run, or they didn't run fast, or they didn't make the team. So Miami, in my opinion, needs to be recruiting corners that you have verified speed numbers on, that you have verified athleticism on both sides of the ball. You could watch, and possibly other sports as well, basketball. Devin Witherspoon, who was he was from Pensacola, Florida last year. Again, from Florida, went to Illinois, it's a Big Ten program, but it's a smaller Big Ten program, certainly not Miami, ends up being a top 10 pick at corner. Why are these Florida cornerbacks going to these small schools? They're basketball players, both of them, they're late bloomers, and Miami's not doing a good enough job of seeing their senior film. So that's the Quinyon Mitchell story, similar to the Devin Witherspoon story.
Well, D, and how about a guy that Miami, is a freshman now, Chris Wheatley Humphrey, who is a track guy, right? I think he's come in and he's done some good things at running back, but you mentioned him when he first committed as someone who the staff thought could potentially play corner as well. You see these highlights and Quinyon Mitchell was obviously playing a lot of running back as well. So you wonder, Wheatley Humphrey wasn't a huge recruit, but those are the types of trends you're looking for if you're trying to add those 3 stars to the roster.
No doubt. And size helps too, right? That's one thing that Wheatley Humphrey has got working against him. I think he's going to be a very good, productive player at the college level. But also you want height on these guys and growth potential. One guy who had no problem with that, Fashanu, the offensive tackle from Penn State. To me, this was just bad. This was bad job by the recruiting sites to have this guy a 3-star. He had offers from Alabama, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, played for a big program in D.C. He was the left tackle for Caleb Williams, so everybody saw him. I just think these guys outsmarted themselves. The recruiting services with him. There's no way this guy should have been a 3-star. Taliese Fuaga from Oregon State. A lot of teams missed on this guy. Go back and watch his film. I see a guy that's playing a more defensive tackle than offensive line. So you look at size, you look at two ways, not just offensive line and defensive line and Polynesian, right? Those guys tend to play pretty good football, especially when they have the size and the athleticism to go both ways. One guy who did go both ways in high school with great size, not Polynesian, but from Florida, Tommy Kinsler, a player that when you watch his high school film, he's playing defensive line and offensive line. Great size, great athleticism. Hopefully you see him shaking Goodell's hand, dapping him up in the future. Got another huddle video that's very interesting. One of the first huddle videos I pulled up when I went back, so I want to understand this one. Jared Verse, of course, went to the University of Albany before transferring to Florida State. Everybody missed on him. And look, I'm not saying this guy should have been P5 star out of high school in terms of recruit, and they just missed on that. He was only 205 pounds. So there's a growth spurt element that gave, put on almost 50 pounds. So, and gained an inch. So that's hard to project. But when you watch these huddle highlights, there's no way this dude should have gone FCS. Mm-hmm. Somebody messed up. He played basketball. He ran 100 meters, 11.3. He ran the 200, 22.6, which is faster than some of our DBs. And even at 6'3", 205, that's still flying. Forget the later growth spurt. You see him running people over. You see him playing defense. You see him being tough. This, to me, was a major miss by at least the smaller Power 5 schools or even the G5 schools. There's no way this guy should have gone FCS. And again, multi-sport, multi-position, both sides of the ball, and verified track measurables. Pete, what do you got, Jared Verse?
Well, I mean, you would think at least one of the MAC schools there in the area would have been all over him, but you see it here. His ability with the ball in his hands is, I mean, he's making people miss. He's blocking. I mean, you see this clip right here. He's driving as well. I mean, so he's a guy who, you're right, just by the plain eye test watching these, some college coaches from back in the day, there may be pretty upset that they didn't pull the trigger there.
Yeah, moving on to Jordan Morgan, the Packers picked, went to University of Arizona, Tucson kid. So your classic local three-star that the local program did a good job evaluating. Sorry if I'm broken record, going to the track. Now, offensive alignment is not just the sprints. You look at the throwing events as well, because, of course, they're using their explosive power. And that also shows their coordination athleticism. 50.9 inches in the shot put, 139.4 in the discus, 149.6 in the javelin. Not only does he show that power with the shot, but he's doing multiple events. So athletic, powerful. He had size. Obviously, he's an NFL offensive lineman, first-round pick. So the size was there. Had a growth spurt earlier in his career in high school, but by the time he was signed, he was big. So to me, story here, size, verified track. Similar story to a lot of these guys. I'll move quick, Darius Robinson from Detroit area, signed with Missouri, defensive lineman, played basketball, played tight end, started football as a junior. Always pay, when someone start playing football later in their career and they play basketball or something like that early, that's something to watch. And then to me, when I'm looking at a defensive lineman and they're playing offense, that's kind of a light bulb thing. Artavius Jones, the defensive lineman that Miami signed this year from Northern Florida, from the Panhandle, he fits into that category. You watch his film, he's playing tight end. He's playing offensive line. He's playing defensive line. He's playing basketball in his huddle highlights. So Darius Robinson, again, these are trends you see consistently. Guys that have size and then do all of these things. They have clear, quantifiable athleticism besides just playing their position.
Well, it's something I was going to say on some of these offensive linemen, 2D, is like, for example, a Morgan guy, you look at Jordan Morgan, who the Packers picked out of Arizona. You look at these physical traits. I asked someone about him a couple of years ago when he first came on my radar, and the first thing is, well, he may be a little on the soft side, right? That was the initial someone I asked, right? And sometimes you just have to overlook some of that stuff and hope to coach that into them, right? Because these physical tools are going to be the most important thing at the end of the day. You can have someone extremely tough, but if they don't have those physical tools to deal with the speed off the edge and, you know, even in the interior in today's game, it doesn't even matter. So,
right. Look, so you're talking about Jordan Morgan, offensive lineman, Darius Robinson, again, another guy with the tools and the multi-sports, two more offensive linemen that fit the same profile. Sorry if it sounds like a broken record, but this should be something that you're digesting. I know I've gotten this stuck in my head from doing this exercise every year, because it's not new. This is every year when you look at the third round, the three stars that make it to the NFL. It's the same thing. Guyton, the offensive lineman, I believe he was picked by the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Basketball player, started football late, similar to Darius Robinson, the D lineman from Missouri. Started late. He played defensive line. His first snaps in college at TCU were actually at H-back. Ends up being an offensive lineman. TCU transfers to Oklahoma, which is an offensive line first round factory, goes to the first round, but similar story. And then here, this was a really fun film to watch. Graham Barton, Duke player, played left tackle for Duke, projects as maybe a center at the next level. Both ways. Again, you're seeing a lot of these offensive linemen. When you look at their film, they're playing on the defensive line as well. That shows their toughness, that shows their athleticism, that shows their importance to the team. Usually guys that are only playing on offense, they're either not tough enough to play defense or they're not athletic enough to play defense. You want to see guys that are good enough to play in the NFL playing both ways in high school, because that is what they're capable of doing, unless you're just on such a loaded team that they don't need you to play both ways. But Barton, from the Nashville suburbs, he played lacrosse growing up. So multi-sport again. Most of these guys are playing basketball, track, those kind of other sports. With Barton, it's lacrosse, which, of course, involves a lot of athleticism. If you're a big guy, the coordination running around to play lacrosse as an offensive lineman body, that's to me something that should trigger, you know, your attention. Of course, Barton's a smart guy, you know, went to a very good school in Nashville, ended up going to Duke. So, you know, that part of it's taken care of. And when he's gotten to Duke, the body picked up, he filled out the toughness from defense. You saw that, the athleticism from defense and lacrosse. You saw that. And the IQ took him to where he was, where he ended up being, which is the first round of the NFL draft. Again, Duke getting a first round pick in the NFL draft, Miami not getting a first round pick in the NFL draft. That is a situation that needs to be corrected. I think Mario will correct that, but you look at these guys, I think these guys fit the bill, certainly.
But he's another one, Barton, where you know this huddle tape is playing, and it's hard to imagine he was the 671st ranked player in the country, right? So yes, the rankings are getting better over the years, but some of these guys, man, still fall through the cracks for sure.
And they shouldn't, in terms of these categories. So we just went through this whole list. You guys are probably bored of hearing some of these things repeated, but they're repeated because they're happening multiple times. The list is done. We've gone through everybody and they all have the same story. Verified height, because you're not going to get that much taller in college. You want multiple sports. If you're a lineman, or even if you're just another skill position player, you want to be doing multiple things for your team because your team needs you to do multiple things, unless you're just on such a loaded team that they don't need you on both sides. But those, to me, are the trends. And if you have those things, the height, the multi-sport athleticism, the multi-position athleticism and football awareness, you have a chance to be a NFL high draft pick. So that's the story on the first round. We'll talk about some Canes once they come off the board here in the second and third day. And, we got the weekend coming up, Pete. Let's talk about some of these guys. Cam Kitchens, what are you hearing on Cam Kitchens as far as where he might end up?
I would think third to fourth round for him, D. And look, that's not to say one of these teams that fell in love with him during the draft process in terms of the interviews and stuff couldn't take him late second round maybe, but I think that's probably the range that he ends up going there. And that's not to say, you know, most people that I've talked to expect him to be in the league for a long time to get to a second contract, right? So yes, not going to end up going obviously in the first round. Doesn't look like he's a second round guy based really on how he tested. And I don't know if that was ever going to change. I don't think his film was spectacular this season at Miami, but at the end of the day, his physicals are what they are, and teams are just, they're going to have to understand what that is, but they still fall. A lot of them have fallen in love with him during the process in terms of the playmaking ability, what he's going to bring to the locker room character wise. And he's essentially a plug and play guy at free safety.
And look, I'm a Cam Kitchens fan. I think he's going to do great. You look at the safeties that do really well in the NFL, unless they're just like a freak of nature, like a Kyle Hamilton or Derwin James, where they do different things. Most of the safeties that have hit have been mid-round guys, your Kevin Byard types, guys that get takeaways, guys that are smart, guys that really understand the game and work at the game. They're not all physical freaks. Most of them aren't. Most of them are just very smart guys who were in that third round range, fourth round range, and ended up becoming Pro Bowl type players. Williams, the guy from Boston College, who ended up being a Pro Bowler for the Denver Broncos. They're all kind of like this, the Buffalo Bills safeties, Poyer. And what's the other safety with the Bills? None of those guys were physical dynamos coming out or high picks. So Cam Kitchens to me falls in that category. I'm not saying he will be a Pro Bowler. I'm saying he fits the mold of guys that have made it. And I bet on the intelligence with him. So one team to watch with some of the later round Canes, I would say the Cleveland Browns. With respect to James Williams, you know, Coach Banda recruited James Williams very hard when he was here. That's the safeties coach for Cleveland Browns. Obviously, we had him at Miami. He recruited James. They had a very tight relationship. He's a guy that, you know, has always been there with James. And Cleveland Browns have a guy that is kind of like that safety linebacker hybrid already. JOK from Notre Dame. Not going to pronounce his name, so I'll bumble it. But he's a very, very good player with that role. So you can see a fit there with Cleveland because of the coach and the scheme. And, Cohen, Javion Cohen, has taken a formal visit to Cleveland, also a 30-day visit or a 30-man visit.
Top 30, yeah.
Top 30. He uses the terminology. You know the game better than me.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, I think, too, with the Banda and Williams relationship, too, a guy like Williams may need someone to kind of take him under his wing a little bit when he gets there. The NFL is, it's a, obviously everyone understands it's a business, it's cutthroat, right? So it's not like college where you come in and you're a lot of times nurtured a little bit when you come in immediately, especially as a highly recruited player. So I think having that familiarity with Banda would be a big help for James for sure.
Now we're going to bring it back to the college game. We're going to take you to football school with Coach Zuck, talking about the transfer portal from a coach's perspective. I learned a lot from this interview. You guys are really, really going to like it. It's just deep inside view from a college coach on how this thing works, the practicalities of it, and how it impacts what they do. That segment is brought to you by Caneswear, caneswear.com. If you're a Dolphins fan, you want to get Dolphins gear, support Chop Robinson, who just got picked in the draft. Go to caneswear.com. It's not just the Canes. They also have the Miami Dolphins, Heat, who are going to take care of business on Saturday and beat the Celtics, the Panthers, who just won yesterday, Marlins, any Miami sports team, and Inter Miami. They got it at Caneswear and at caneswear.com. So go check it out. If you're local, go to Davey. Best store in the business as far as customer service. You will not be disappointed with Caneswear. Without further ado, let's kick it to Coach Zuck. All right, football school is back in session. Had a few weeks off. My man Zuck was traveling the world, got a little under the weather, but he is back off the injured list, ready to teach us a little bit about football from behind the scenes, the eyes of a 10-year college coaching vet. So Zuck, how you doing? How you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Good. Good to be back. Just running around the world doing stuff. It's fun, man. But missed you guys.
But listen, you know the portal's going hot and heavy right now with Miami fans going nuts. We've been basically done 7 straight portal pods, it feels like. And I think, you know, you say portal, it sounds like something in outer space, but there's a practical element to this. And like, we're not going to get into sort of the impact of the portal and the impact on the coaching profession in terms of the bigger picture, which I know is a hot topic. I want to just understand from a coaching perspective how it impacts the routine. What's the process of the portal and how it adjusts how you approach, you know, personnel and your strategy? Because you've lived in the pre-portal era and you lived in the portal era. So you have some perspective on that. So just straight from the top, let's talk about people entering into the portal. You are a position coach, but you're involved in recruiting and player personnel, obviously. From your perspective, what's it like when a player enters the portal that your program may be interested in?
So the first thing is that a lot of it kind of depends at what level you're at. You know, the bigger schools, Power Five schools and everything, have an entire department that their job is to constantly monitor the portal. And at least in my opinion, the fastest way to figure out when people on the portal nowadays is either just honestly probably the same Twitter accounts you guys follow, or you knew somebody, like somebody tied to that kid who's like his high school coach or his parent or everyone, like reaches out and says, hey, this guy's in the portal. He just entered, or blah, blah, blah. So that's the first thing, is just figuring out who's exactly in, where they're at. The other thing is you have your antennas up just even in advance, because it's different. In the past, it used to be your recruiting conversations were just, okay, in this class, we need X amount of this position, X amount of that position, X amount of that position. Now, even like in May and June, and just when you're planning, even earlier, when you're planning out your entire recruiting class, you have, okay, we're going to take X amount of high school here and X amount of transfer. Or even, okay, we're going to either take high school or 3 or 4 year transfer and one older. So even the amount of years matters, because, you know, if you take a kid who just redshirted and you got 4 years, there's really no difference between taking him and taking a high school kid. So the number one thing is, one, figuring out your needs and how many transfers and what type of transfers you're looking for. And then, as just through various sources, your normal recruiting sources, your recruiting department, whether you're just paying attention to it yourself, as those names pop up, you're like, oh man, blah, blah, blah. Is he actually in the portal yet? Because once he's officially in, now, honestly, the quickest way to get the kids, unless you already had their cell phone numbers, normally just a DM, just be like, hey man, you know, we're interested in you, you know, blah, 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 get their cell phone number, kick off the process from there. But that's one of the most challenging things, is how fast and furious it happens. You know, with the current transfer portal rules, when it opens, you have a very short amount of time to develop a relationship, trust your evaluation, figure out whether they fit with your team, and get them signed. You know, it happens really, really, really quick, and it's such an accelerated part as opposed to high school recruiting, where sometimes you're meeting these kids when they're freshmen and sophomores and building that long relationship with their families over time and can really dig down into so many different factors, whereas this is happening in like 2 weeks.
Zuck, you kind of led me into my question about building the relationship. Obviously, when they're in high school, you get to build a relationship, but you get to know them, know their family, understand the type of character you're bringing in the locker room. And one thing that I hear from people in the coaching business now is like, sometimes you have to overlook some of that when you're bringing in guys in from the portal, because they may not be the perfect, exactly what you're looking for, whether it's off the field or from a, you know, leadership standpoint, we'll put it that way. Right. But You gotta trust the talent that you see and say, look, this guy can give us something. So kind of balancing, he's not the exact type of guy that we would recruit out of high school, but the talent's there. We could take a chance on this kid.
Yeah, and I think that all comes back to the culture of your locker room and how strong it is, because, you know, I'm a very firm believer that culture wins in college football. And you'll hear a lot of coaches talk about, you know, there's way more teams that lose games on Saturdays than win games on Saturdays. The vast majority of the games, even, and I know it's like I always think back, like a great example. Everyone always thinks like, it's, you know, it's Miami's here and this school's there, or just Power Five is here and this school's there, Group Five. But like, everybody's good and everyone's got good coaches trying to win. There's nobody, unless it's just some complete mismatch. Like, look at, I think back to the two games versus Toledo in 17 and 18, right? Like, Toledo had a quarterback who stuck around in the league for a while, like three really, really good receivers who had played in the NFL for a little bit. Like, that was a talented team. And it's like, you know, it's a, because they also, they developed over a long time with culture and they were coached well, and that's so important. So when you bring a kid in, there's a couple of things. I think it's still really, really, really important to evaluate, are they a cultural fit? And if they're not a cultural fit, is our culture good enough to bring them in? Because if you have culture issues and then bring in more culture issues, things are going to fall apart. I don't care how talented you are. You're not going to, like, when things get hard in a game, your kids aren't going to pull together. They're going to pull apart. Whereas, you know, if your culture is really, really, really good, I think you can take a little bit more of a risk because, you know that you have really, really good kids that are going to make sure that that guy falls in line, or is it going to work out there once you bring him in? And that, I think that's the hardest challenge of the portal is, you know, figuring, you know, anyone in a few weeks can come off a certain way and then over a few months be like, oh my God, this wasn't a fit. So you have to have some blind faith and trust your gut and talk to as many people as possible about, you know, is this a guy who fits? And that's why I'd advise any athlete who's in the portal, just know, and this is, you know, it always used to be the NFL argument, but it's the portal argument now too. You need to treat everyone with respect. Like, don't let, like, you don't understand, like, at least for me as a coach, I tried to dig into every single place I could on a transfer kid to find out as much information as possible. And like, if there's somebody in that building that you've treated poorly and somebody asks that you know, somebody gets to him and asks him a question, he's not going to speak well about you, and that can hurt your chances. So it's, and then I know Pete, you know, from the NFL side, those guys evaluate and find every single person to talk to in the building to try and figure out, because, you know, if there's any issues, because they're going to make a big investment in them. Well, college, with NIL and with scholarships, it's a big investment now. So you have to do everything possible. And from a kid's perspective, you better not be treating anybody the wrong way, because that stuff's going to get out.
Zuck, can you get into the evaluation process a little bit in terms of guys who take a step up, whether it be G5 to P5, FCS to FBS, and kind of walk us through as a coach how you kind of figure out this guy's got the stuff. Yes, he wasn't playing against the best competition. He's going to take a step up. It's better than what he's used to, but we think he can hang at this level.
Yeah, and that's where I think it comes into, it's very similar to kind of high school recruiting, in where, you know, in high school, you know that you know there's always, even at the best levels of high school football, a dominant Division I prospect should be dominating who he plays against. Even at, so what you look at is, you know, just first of all, you want to look for physical traits. You know, are the physical traits there for this guy to be successful? I never felt like group of five was that, but like I said, everybody's good. If you're playing really well at group of five, I have a hard time believing that you're not going to at least have some success at the power five level. You know, then you start to look at physical attributes, like, is this guy legitimately running away from everybody? Is he, you know, you try to evaluate, is he playing a league that maybe has less speed? So is his speed going to translate here? Is he good in this league? You know, as a, if he's smaller, like thinking about a smaller receiver, like is he not playing against anybody with bigger DBs? Because then that can become an issue if a guy's moving up. I think it's much more the physical attributes you have to look at. And, you know, because I think quarterbacks are quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, they are processing and everything like that. You know, maybe is he, you know, you got to worry about pass rushers. And has he played as good pass rushers he's going to face moving up? I think, but the group of five level to me translates pretty well. I think as you move down, it becomes more and more of a risk just because, I mean, the top FCS teams can play with anybody. Like you see like a North Dakota State or who wants South Dakota State, that whole league. Like in just future reference, if just for all Power Five coaches, if you see a Dakota on the schedule, it's always pretty terrifying. Just all of them, but that league, I mean, they're as good as any Group of Five team, and honestly, they beat some Power Five teams. So, you know, the highest FCS I still think translates really well. As you get into lower FCS and D2 and even D3, like, you know, there's kids who sometimes make that jump. I think that gets harder and harder because it's such a drastic change. Whereas, you know, you can take a kid who was dominant at that level and then he just can't handle the speed of a Power Five. So it's really, to me, the lower levels where that comes into effect more.
Well, let me go to Miami, because you were at Miami when the portal really became a thing, right? With Coach Diaz, and what you just talked about earlier, right? Bringing in character guys. It seems like the guys that really hit in the portal, your KJ Osborne's, De'Eric King's, you know, D. Delaney, who's still in the league, I believe, Jalen Phillips, who I know there were some mixed reports coming out, but ended up, you know, just the IQ and the work ethic and all those things came together at Miami. What was the portal experience like for you at Miami? So fast, and what did you learn from what Miami did in the portal in those years?
I'd say the biggest thing to me is something I actually learned and believe in recruiting as well, is you talked about a bunch of kids with an incredibly mature mindset right there. And I think coming out of the portal, especially when you have a few years left, you need to understand that mature mindset and how important it is for you to do everything right and get on the field right away. I always felt everywhere I was that the kids who play as freshmen are mature beyond their years, because they understand how to be a pro right away and understand their playbook. And not only that, balance school and football, because that's a thing. There's always kids who come in the spring or in fall camp and have really good springs and fall camps. And then once that full, you know, four or five class schedule hits, as well as your, as well as football, and all of a sudden you got to balance assignments and tests and school, like, and the grind of the season, it gets hard, and there's a lot of kids who fall off at that point. And the most mature freshmen coming in always were the ones who saw the field. And I think that's even exacerbated when you get to portal kids who only have a few years to play. Especially, you're a one-year kid, you better have the mindset that I am going to do everything possible to succeed and not get in my own way and take care of all my business, because you got 1 year. So I just think, again, yeah, if you're in the portal, you need to look for the kids who are in it, who because they love football and are looking for a better football opportunity. I think you can get into trouble if you start, you know, just guys who are looking to get more money and don't really love the game. That can be a problem. Now, then there's nothing wrong with somebody trying to get more money. Like, they're good for the kids. But it's just, you know, it's so tough in a few weeks to figure out the character of that player. But, you know, I just think the best you can do is finding mature character guys who love ball, the more success you're going to have.
On the football evaluation side, I'm not asking for any kind of secrets of a program, but just from your personal process, you know, Coach Zuck, I mean, this is going so fast. What are you doing to get up to speed on a kid that just jumped in the portal that could potentially help your program?
So first of all, I'm going to see if I knew anyone on the previous staff. You know, that's obviously going to be the best source of information. And you always have to take it with a little bit of grain of salt and talk to them, because obviously, you know, and you got to be, to me, you got to be sensitive about it too. Like, I'll just personal example, you know, I had a kid go in the portal, and I don't need to mention who it is, but the like I had coaches who I hadn't spoken to in 10 years calling me an hour after they saw his name, like acting like I'm my best friend. And like, come on, you know, it's like, just give me like a little, like, obviously I'm not happy about losing a starter. Like, at least give me some time or anything like that. But at the same time, I'm not really mad, because that's the pressure and the speed and all that. But so you have to just keep that in mind talking to someone. It's like, you know, there are some personal hurt feelings there. It just is what it is. But coaches from other programs, obviously you're going to reach out to, if you know, you're going to find either, if you know the high school coach, or you're going to talk to the coach in your building who has that kid's area to find a contact in high school. You're going to try and get in touch with parents. You're going to try and just basically it becomes your 4-year recruiting high school process in a matter of a week. Try to hit all of those people, figure out exactly who they are, what they like, what's important to them, why they get in the portal, you know, because there's a million different reasons why kids get in, and can they play. So it was just kind of try to dig and find as much background information as I could. And then, you know, most programs have PFF at this point. So, you know, that's always helpful, is you have PFF cuts up the kids for you. So you'll watch like a cut up basically of all their good and bad plays from the year and try to evaluate, is this a fit? Is it not? And, you know, oftentimes too, kids will have, you know, practice. If it's a kid who hasn't played in the game, they'll normally have some type of highlight from practice and things like that. So you just try and gather. It's all about gathering as much information as you can to eliminate the chance of not getting a good player.
Now, forgetting whether this is good or bad for the sport and that whole conversation, just from, again, football coach trying to win ball games and establish a culture of a team, what's your view on the right makeup of portal versus high school? Assume you're a big program with resources.
I just think it all comes down to, you know, what do we need to win next year? And how can we build a real program, you know, the program that is sustainable too? Because what you don't want, and you know, it's always a concern, is that you just have to continually flip the roster. Now, this is where, you know, it's hard, because especially at the group of five level, when you lose a lot of guys, you have to bring in a lot of guys. It's very hard when you lose a senior player who's been a starter to replace him with anything other than another kid who's played a lot of ball in the portal. So I think it's really, that's kind of an individualistic question to every roster. And it's really just based on what are your needs and how quickly do you need to fill that need? Do I have a backloaded roster where I want to take all young guys, or do I have a hole due to leaving for the draft, getting poached in the portal or something like that, and I need to fill them with someone who can step in as an older guy right now? So I don't think there's no perfect answer to that question in today's day and age. I think it's all just based on how your roster is built and what your needs are for that next coming year. Because ultimately the job is to win next season. You know, everyone wants to say we're going to build a program here over a few years, but nobody really gets that much time anymore. And that's just the reality of college football.
Zuck, having those conversations, again, not to get too, you know, don't need specific examples of guys, right? But when a guy comes to you and understanding that it is the portal era, where if a freshman doesn't see the field, doesn't see significant time right off the bat, they just think, well, there's got to be a better opportunity elsewhere, right? And what are those conversations like to kind of walk them through? This is what the situation is. This is, you know, you still have to develop a little bit. You have certain areas to improve, and this is when you're going to be able to see the field. I mean, it's a ready-made game now, right? Guys think that they should play right away. So those conversations, just trying to explain to them the grass may not be greener on the other side necessarily. Just talk to us about those conversations.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem becomes, it's almost, I won't say it's a societal problem, but, you know, in this day and age, when you want an answer to something, you pull out your phone, you Google it, and you have the answer immediately. You know, you want to watch a TV show. It's not like when I was a kid, you have to wait till Wednesday at 8:30 to watch that TV show. You go to Netflix. Everything that we're trained about now is instant gratification. So it's really hard, and I understand this, when you're a freshman, because you were the best player on your high school team for a long time, and everything on the internet shows you all these amazing freshmen doing amazing things, and you see all these guys succeed, and you go in and don't have that success right away, which is, you know, it's challenging and it's hard. And then you want instant gratification. So you think, well, I didn't get it here, I should go somewhere else. And what hurts is, you know, there's transfer culture in high school now. So some kids have already done this by the time they get to school. They didn't have success at their first high school and transferred to another high school. So that's what they're kind of programmed to do. And the only thing I'd say to that is you need to look at your situation. And if the only reason that you want to leave is because you didn't get the previous playing time you wanted, I don't think you're being fair to yourself. You know, I think you need to look at everything. Like, are you happy? If you go to a school that you're really happy at and you love your coaches, I don't think that you need to transfer. I think you should enjoy being there. You know, if everything is good but that one thing, go have a conversation with your coach. And as a coach, you should be able to have, like, what's the word? Like, actual evidence, video documentation of why they're not in the game, you know? And you need to be able to back up your opinions as a coach. That's why it's so important to grade practices and things like that. And even if it is your opinion, you know, because it sometimes is a feel thing, like guys can be grading out extremely close. Like, you just have to have a way to actually show why you feel that way, because it's frustrating as a player if you go say, why am I not playing? And the coach can't give you a good answer. And that's on your job as a coach. In your job description is to be able to explain that to a kid. And you know what? If someone wants to then leave, that's why the portal's there. And if I also think too, once somebody's made that decision, it's, you know, it's really hard to talk somebody out of wanting to leave. Because if you've come to that decision, not from an emotional place, because that's the other thing I've always told kids is, I don't want you to don't make a decision while you're angry. Don't make a decision while you're sad. Take some time, think about it, and get to a place where you're comfortable and making a non-emotional decision. And if they come to where they still want to transfer, you know, if you're fighting to keep them to stay, there's just going to be something else that makes them leave. You know, you got to be all in where you're at. And I think that's part of being a successful college football player too, is you got to be all in where you're at. And if you're not all in, even if if you're not all in, you're going to end up finding a reason to leave, in my opinion.
Now, back in the day, coaches worried about developing the player and building the team. Those were the considerations, right, of the decisions they made. Now you have to worry about potentially losing players based on decisions you make. How has that impacted coaches in terms of their decision making about guy playing, what, you know, where they play, things like that? How has just the threat of losing a kid without having to sit out a year changed the way people coach?
You know, honestly, I haven't heard any. I've heard about it. I haven't seen any of it firsthand, you know, and if that is the case, that's kind of sad to me, just because, you know, like, it's just your job's to win the game, and you shouldn't. It is so hard to win college football games. And if you're worrying about, I didn't get so-and-so enough playing time, to me, like, that, you know, but we won the game, like, that's just taking away what the point of football is. It's the ultimate team sport, and our job is to win the game. And if someone is upset because if the team wins and someone is still upset because they didn't play, like, that to me is an issue beyond football. Like, we have to talk about, what are your goals here? And if it's just, you know, I'm all in it for myself, then maybe that person doesn't want to be a part of that team anymore. And that's fine, you know, because I just think if that's coming into your decision, that's just something that should, and it's unfortunate if that's going on, because you need to put everything into getting the best players on the field to win in the game, period. You know, now, you know, you want to rotate guys. No one wants, obviously it depends on the position, but for the most part, at least as a defensive coach, if it was up to me, I did not want my guys having to play every single snap, because you're going to get tired. So you want to have depth and rotation and all that. But again, if you have a kid who's clearly your starter and he's the best player, you know, he needs to be in the game for you to win the game. So, you know, it's unfortunate if the state of the profession's like that, but I hope that's not going on too much.
So, Coach, real quick, before you've been awesome on the portal, it's draft weekend. I want to ask you a question about a player that you were part of the staff that evaluated probably since he was a sophomore, I'm guessing, which is Cam Kitchens. You know, I know you didn't get to coach him really because of when you left to Utah State, but I know you were in those rooms, some of those meetings. Tell me what you can remember about the identification evaluation of Cam Kitchens, who is now has his jersey or his number in the rafters at the IPF as an All-America and is on his way to the NFL.
Yeah, Cam was one of those kids who, it's funny, I swear, there's sometimes kids who walk in the building and from their personality, you just know, like, okay, this is a guy. Because I remember watching, I can't remember when we actually offered Cam, but it was early. But, you know, when he was a sophomore, I think he wasn't your prototypical, like, you know, like you looked at James Williams as a ninth grader, and you're like, oh my God, offer, you know. Like, Cam didn't have that body type yet as a young guy. But then when you met the kid, you know, and he wouldn't remember me, like, I probably had maybe one conversation with him as a recruit, but you know, I was with Banda and Banda obviously recruited him very heavily. But he just immediately, even from a young age, you know, like looked in the eye, could hold, like, great kid, could hold a conversation, you know, just, you could tell there was something to the kid, like some substance there. And then you watch the film and he's just such a good football player. The immediate comparison was Jaquan Johnson, like immediately, because you saw the way he just found the ball. You know, you watch Jaquan's high school football highlights are so fun because he's just so good at football. You know, there are kids who are so good at football that they transcend physical attributes. And I'm not saying, like, I know Cam has, like, he's not, like, not physically gifted by any means, but he's not like, oh my God, James Williams type physically gifted, but he's just so unbelievably good at football and finds the football. So that's just what I remember to me is, like, you watched him, he just looked like had this amazing ability to track the football and make plays. And then that combined with who he was as a leader that just, you know, came off of him. So I wasn't surprised at all to see, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but because I wasn't here, but that first 21 year, he had success as a freshman, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Similar to Jaquan.
That goes back to what I was saying. Mature kid who knew what, you know, it was all about ball, knew what he was doing and kept his head down and came in and had that mindset that allowed him to play as a true freshman and handle all that expectation and responsibility.
Listen, Coach, appreciate you. I promise we're going to talk some real football next time, but the portal is so high, we had to get your perspective on it. Again, appreciate your time. Appreciate Claire for hooking us up with the tech and, you know, enjoy the weekend. Glad you're back and we'll have some fun next week.
Appreciate it, man.